Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us, everybody. This is your host, Jim Masters. We are live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. We hope you're having a terrific day wherever you're listening around the world. And we have an extraordinary guest who is joining us from Newport Beach, California. And it's going to be a very, very eye-opening conversation. We're very proud to welcome, for part one of an exclusive two-part series, pulmonologist Dr. James L. Pearl. He's a top-notch board-certified physician specializing in pulmonology, and he is the specialist to see when experiencing symptoms of asthma and COPD, pneumonia, emphysema, bronchitis, tuberculosis, and other breathing issues, including sleep apnea. It's no wonder in these times of COVID-19, pulmonologists have become the go-to doctors for life-saving treatment. Dr. Pearl has over 30 years of experience and has been really incredibly helpful to his patients. Many more accomplishments to his credit as well over the years. His office practice includes treating patients with various pulmonary problems, including many suffering from COVID-19. He also teaches at the University of California, Irvine, training other doctors and consulting legal cases like occupational and malpractice, and running clinical research trials on medications for pharmaceutical companies. Dr. Pearl also treats many funders, such as firefighters, nurses, and others who've contracted COVID-19, lung problems as a result. Naturally, he became one of the go-to doctors for COVID-19 and post-COVID-19 patients. He found right away that the virus was not like a normal flu or cold. Many patients who survive the virus often develop long-lasting effects like brain fog and muscle and joint pain, extreme fatigue, irregular heartbeats, and even chest pains. He summarizes, in these unprecedented times, what we need most is to gather as much information as possible, science, and be assured that those in the health profession will be honest and do their absolute best to help people, which we'll mention again during the course of the show. And again, this is part one of a exclusive Close Up Radio two-part series, is pearlpulmonary.com. I'll spell that out for you. P-E-A-R-Y. If you'd like to, during the course of the show or after the show, go to the website and connect with Dr. Pearl. It's my pleasure to welcome him to Close Up Radio for this 30-minute conversation. Again, this is part one of an exclusive Close Up Radio two-part series. Dr. Pearl, thank you very much for joining us here on Close Up Radio. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here and get a chance to talk about some of the things that are really of interest to me and hopefully some of the listeners.
Absolutely. You know, I like to find out a little bit more about what inspires our guests to do the work that they do and do so well. For you, what were some of the inspirations, even on your own life's journey, that pointed you in the direction of wanting to become a pulmonary doctor and specializing in that area of healthcare?
Well, I think it's important, even before we start, that people understand what pulmonary doctors or pulmonologists do. We're the doctors that specializes in the lungs and in lung disease. And I probably went through half my career finding out that if I told people I was a pulmonologist, they'd ask, oh, that's the heart? Only in the last couple of years since pulmonary doctors have been taking care of COVID patients, kind of has the population start to understand what we do. Anyway, to understand how I got to pulmonary disease, people have to understand really how doctors do their training. after we come out of medical school, when we're going to go into internship and residency, we have to decide which specialty we want to do. Specialties are things like surgery or psychiatry or radiology or internal medicine. Internal medicine is the specialty that involves all the organs of the body, like the lungs, the heart, the kidneys, the intestines, endocrine problems, the thyroid, things like that. So once we go into internal medicine, we get exposed to subspecialty fields like pulmonary disease or cardiologists or gastroenterology. I found that as soon as I started looking at pulmonary disease, it seemed that the lungs were at the center of people's world. I mean, not only are the lungs in the center of patients' worlds, that they're in the center of the body. Everyone has to breathe. Everyone has to take in oxygen to get to their tissues so that their muscles and their brain can work. So it always seemed to me that the lungs were kind of the fulcrum of everything that was happening in the body. You know, at the same time, when I started working in the hospital, the pulmonary doctors seemed to be at the center of everything interesting that was happening. They were taking care of the sickest patients with things like pneumonia or COPD. They were working in the ICU and managing people on ventilators and breathing machines. So it just seemed that the specialty of pulmonary disease seemed central to everything that was happening, at least for me in medicine. So that's why I did the extra couple of years of training to become a pulmonologist.
It's incredible work, and thanks for bringing that out and really defining what it is. You mentioned some of the things that you treat and that you son. What are some of the top reasons that one would pulmonologist?
Well, I think probably the main complaint that all patients have, maybe the most common and usually the one that gets patients to a pulmonary doctor, is shortness of breath. Now, not all shortness of breath is caused by problems in the lungs. It can be caused by heart disease, obesity, anemia, people just deconditioned and out of shape. And pulmonary doctors particularly sometimes have to be detectives like Dr. House in the TV show about 10 years ago to decide what the causes of the shortness of breath might be. Once we've done our detective work and decided that the shortness of breath, which is our most common complaint, is a problem in the lungs, we have to use our skills to decide what the problem might be. It could be asthma or bronchitis or pneumonia or tuberculosis or fibrosis in the lungs or fluid in the lungs or blood clots in the lungs. All these are kind of different diagnoses and have to be treated different ways. And the pulmonologist usually knows how to use his examination and x-rays or CT scans or breathing tests or scopes to try to make the right diagnosis. So for these kinds of complaints, the pulmonary specialists, I think, are the best detectives. We often kind of forget that another thing that pulmonologists deal with a lot is sleep apnea. It's not really kind of well known, but 5 to 10 to 20% of the population has sleep apnea, which is usually when people obstruct their breathing overnight and get low oxygen levels, and it can cause sudden death, heart failure, fatigue, and shortening of the lifespan, and the pulmonologists are typically the go-to people to evaluate and treat sleep apnea.
Those are all important and relevant. And, you know, there's a lot of doctors out there, and everybody has their methods and their approach. What distinguishes you in particular, doctor, maybe from others that are out there that do similar work in terms of your approach and your way of thinking?
Well, I think I have a range of experience that's maybe a little different and a little broader than some of the other doctors. I've worked in an intensive care unit as an intensivist. I've worked in the hospital as a hospitalist. I've been a medical director employed by a hospital. I've been the chief of staff for the doctors at a hospital. I've taught doctors in university hospitals. I've published papers. I've been a medical legal expert for many years. And I've also spent about 20 years running a clinical research office where we were performing clinical trials, developing new drugs and treatments in probably more than 1,000 patients. I don't think too many other physicians have that kind of broad experience.
You know, you mentioned sleep apnea, and sleep apnea is something that people are starting to learn more and more about as they investigate, you know, why they're so exhausted and these other symptoms of waking up at night feeling like they can't breathe. Is that something, when working with a pulmonologist like yourself, that through certain techniques, methodologies, and processes, it can be reversed? Or is it that once you are officially diagnosed with having sleep apnea, that's what you're going to be living with for the rest of your life? Is it something that you could work on, lifestyle changes, different things, to not only deal with it, but hopefully reverse it or potentially eliminate it?
Well, I think the answer is yes and no. There's a kind of a relationship between sleep apnea and weight. So apnea tends to be worse when people are heavier and get better when people lose weight, but it usually doesn't make it go away. So that's not a cure. People also tend generally to get a little worse as they get older. So I think we have to accept sleep apnea as a disease that we manage. There were some surgical procedures that we're not doing quite as much in an attempt to cure sleep apnea. But generally, we've been managing with masks that are now pretty comfortable and provide some pressure to keep the airways open. And there were a couple of new surgical procedures to manage sleep apnea that I think we don't have enough experience to know whether that's going to solve the problem. So a little fatalistic in that it doesn't usually go away, but optimistic in the sense we have great technologies to treat it.
Very fascinating, yeah, really, as people learn more about it. And then, of course, COVID-19 has presented a whole other series of issues and things we have to deal with in our lives on many different levels. How have you been helping patients who have been diagnosed with COVID-19?
Well, I'm sure you and all the listeners remember that when COVID first hit America, I mean, it was a little bit over 2 years ago, we were pretty shocked at how many of these patients got sick, were hospitalized with breathing problems. A lot of those patients wound up in the intensive care unit. A lot of those wound up on ventilators to help them breathe. And sadly, a lot of them died despite our best efforts. These kinds of issues of patients with breathing problems and ventilators were what pulmonologists were trained for. So it's almost like pulmonologists were created to be the doctors to manage sick COVID patients, because we knew how to treat all the problems that the COVID patients got. That's why you saw so many pulmonologists, interviewed on TV about their experiences, because we were all seeing dozens and hundreds of very ill people, overwhelming the hospitals. And since a lot of COVID patients have longer term problems, pulmonologists like me have been taking care of a lot of the long-term problems in these COVID patients as well.
It's amazing. I'm sure your phone has been ringing off the hook, and you've been extraordinarily busy with everything. How have you been helping those who have the long-term side effects of the virus? We're learning, obviously as research is done and studies are done, that there are, for some, these long-term side effects that just continue. How have you and patients dealing with that?
Well, I and pulmonologists like me have been seeing a lot of the COVID patients either out of the hospital or just from the office, because they have ongoing breathing problems like asthma or bronchitis, or even scarring in their lungs from COVID pneumonia. Now, before COVID, I had been seeing people like firefighters for breathing problems. And since COVID, that kind of morphed into me becoming the destination for a lot of the first responders, like firefighters, nurses, police officers who had persistent breathing problems. Now, COVID is a virus that causes inflammation throughout the body. So this inflammation has given people things like brain fog, headaches, fatigue, arthritis, joint pains, chest pains, heart problems, with symptoms that kind of cross the whole spectrum of medical disease. A lot of them have had difficulty returning to work. So we've been sending many of these patients to do specific COVID rehabilitation. We manage their bronchitis with inhalers and other medicines, and I get a chance to work with a lot of other very smart specialists to help deal with these other COVID problems that continue long term. It's still stunning how many of those patients there are.
I can imagine. Yeah, it's stunning is a wonderful word to describe the entire COVID-19 experience for everybody on so many different levels. Now, I mentioned the sleep apnea and the possibility of it being helped through. Overall, would you say, is there hope for recovery for patients who experience respiratory type issues?
Oh, sure. Great things are happening in pulmonary disease. We've got great inhalers. We've got other medicines. We've got biologic drugs that we can inject for people that make people with asthma just profoundly better, and maybe in the future are going to help patients with COPD. We've got really good antibiotics that treat bronchitis and pneumonia. We have the technologies that we were talking about of managing sleep apnea kind of comfortably and effectively. So we've accomplished so much to be able to help pulmonary patients. And one of the first things that I try to overcome with a lot of our chronic patients is they have sort of a nihilistic approach to their disease and think there's no hope. And the first thing we've got to do is help change their mindset. But maybe the best news of all of this is that people have a lot of reserve in their lungs. you know, as you know, people can live on one lung. So there's a lot of extra lung to go around. So even if patients have bad lung disease and have lost a lot of lung function, they still usually have enough reserve in their lungs to live a pretty good quality of life and do pretty well.
That's very, very inspiring, hopeful, and positive news, Doctor. And I'm sure our listeners are very encouraged by that. Asthma is another thing that a lot of people do deal with. And from your perspective, how about that, the tackling of asthma? What is the prognosis from individuals? I know it's case by case, and we can't do grudge stroke or any of that because it's the individual. It's not a cookie-cutter situation. But what would you say is, I guess, generally the prognosis for individuals suffering with something like asthma, which can really be debilitating?
Well, asthma is really common. Some people think that at least 5% of the population have asthma. Now, asthma, to be kind of precise, is a disease where people have inflammation in their airways. And when the airways get inflamed, the muscles surrounding the airways constrict and block the airways and cause obstruction. And people get short of breath from the inflammation, and they can become short of breath from the obstruction. Now, typically over the years, people have thought that all you needed to treat asthma was a quick-acting inhaler like albuterol that basically pries the airways open for a few hours and then stops working. But now, because of all our additional knowledge, we now understand how to treat the inflammation. And some of our inhalers, like inhaled steroids and injectable drugs, dramatically reduce that inflammation. So we really, with asthma, have the capability of really transforming people's lives. The patients just need to find a good pulmonologist who knows all these treatments and all the resources that are out there. But I love treating asthma because we can do so well with those patients.
Again, more hopeful and inspiring and encouraging news from our noted guest, everybody listening, Dr. James Pearl. This is really fantastic. What is it like treating these patients? Again, it's individual. When people come to you, are they sometimes just exploring symptoms, want to figure out what's happening, or do sometimes are there events that happen that trigger panic when they can't breathe, or there's just other things that happen? Tell us about what it's like treating the patients, and I'm sure there's varying scenarios when patients come to you for that very first time.
Well, I think it goes a little bit back to the detective work we talked about earlier. I think it's important that the pulmonologist determines what the disease is, what's going on. Could it be asthma and bronchitis or COPD, which is really common? COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and is usually kind of related to smoking, or they could have fibrosis, or they could have infections that are treatable. So it can be really satisfying when we have patients with diseases like asthma, because we can improve them so much and return a really good quality of life. It's a little more frustrating and maybe a little more difficult of managing people with diseases like COPD, because they're a little fatalistic and we know we can't make the disease go away. But even so, with kind of good treatment, with pulmonary rehabilitation, with education, with information, with working with people like occupational therapists and respiratory therapists and pharmacists and dietitians, that we can really improve the lives of even people with bad disease. unfortunately, you can't win all of these cases, but there's so much satisfaction in what we are able to accomplish even in the worst cases.
Really amazing. And something else that's been obviously in the news and there's been so much back and forth on it, I can say myself that I have been wearing the mask, you know, in the places where it's required, wearing the mask throughout COVID, especially during the thick of it all. And if, you know, I mean, going into a facility that has it posted, I honor it and I wear it, and I totally believe in it. But how about for you? Do you recommend mask wearing? I know some people have expressed issues with breathing and other types of things, claustrophobia, other dealing with other things. I'm sure you've heard everything you could possibly hear on this subject.
Well, I think you've kind of taken what I think is a pretty realistic position. I'm a big fan of common sense mask wearing, especially in close quarters when people are together and breathing the same air and when ventilation isn't very good. I don't see much advantage to mask wearing outside. I think it's always worth remembering that you don't wear a mask just to protect yourself, but to protect others. And we live in a world with other people, and I think it's worth putting up with a little mild discomfort or inconvenience to try to protect others. I kind of have to remind everybody that COVID is still around, and I have close friends that have gotten COVID just in the last couple of weeks after just letting their guard down a little bit. They're not seriously ill, but they certainly have some misery. I also saw in the New York Times, I think just today or yesterday, that Broadway theaters are now lifting the mask mandate for audiences, and some of the performers are concerned. Hugh Jackman was out from Music Man because he tested positive. And they mentioned another play where half of the performers are out because they are sick and testing positive. So we are still not out of the woods, and we have to continue to be alert, even if the COVID that we're dealing now is not quite as serious as the COVID we dealt with a year ago.
Very true. I know a number of people who are dealing with it themselves and have dealt with it just in recent weeks. So it is out there, and it is still prevalent. This has been a fascinating conversation. Boy, I wish we were on together longer. I have so many more questions, and I find this such a fascinating topic, Doctor. But you will be back for part two next week. We're very excited about that. That is Friday, July 1st, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific here on Close Up Radio. And we thoroughly look forward to that, and we'll pick up the conversation further. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. James Pearl, joining us. A pleasure, and appreciate your time, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Jim. The pleasure's been mine.
You are very welcome. Keep up the extraordinary work, and we look forward to continuing the conversation next week. For our listeners, if you'd like to connect with Dr. Pearl and learn more about his extraordinary work, I encourage you to go to the website, pearlpulmonary.com. That's PULMONARY.com. He's extraordinary. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, Dr. Pearl will be back next week, so look forward to that. And I'll be back in just a moment with another amazing guest for you here on Close Up Radio. So then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for joining us, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.